all across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And welcome to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossone with VeteransRadio.net.
I am your officer of the deck today, Lieutenant J.G. Type. Before we get started on the interviews, though, we want to mention our sponsors, Legal Help for Veterans, a veterans disability law firm handling claims all around the nation. You can reach them at 800-693-4800 or legalhelpforveterans.com. Our VSO sponsors include Vietnam Veterans of America, Charles S. Kettles Chapter, 310, in Ann Arbor, Michigan, American Legion Post 46 out of Ann Arbor, the VFW Graft O'Hara Post 423, and U.S. Wings, which provides those great giveaway leather bomber jackets. They've been online for decades now, and you can find them at uswings.com. We also want to encourage you to go to our website, veteransradio.net, and help us out with a few sponsorships, maybe some buddy money, maybe being involved in buying some of our new swag at the veteransradio.net swag store, or PX or exchange. That also helps promote and keep this program on the air. And now to our interviews. We have two interesting interviews today, I think, for you. The first one's going to be pretty serious. It's on PFAS contamination. PFAS is a man-made chemical used to make things slippery, has a lot of military applications, including in firefighting foam, and we find such contamination around military bases. We're going to talk to somebody today about up at Oscoto, Michigan, and the base, the closed base up there, about what they're doing about PFAS contamination. So I'm going to lighten it up a little bit, if you will, then for the second presentation today, or interview in the second half. And we're going to talk about whether or not pinup girls are a sexist act or a morale booster. There's a group out in California that pinups for vets that visits VA hospitals, and they've come under some controversy because their 1940s World War II USO persona is being criticized for being too sexist. Is it a morale booster, or is it promoting sexual stereotypes? Listen in and you decide. We want to welcome to Veterans Radio today Anthony Spinola. Anthony is a lawyer, but we've got him on for his experiences at Worth Smith Air Force Base on issues of PFAS. Anthony, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Jim, good to be with you.
Well, Tony and I actually go back a long ways as lawyers here in the state of Michigan.
Yeah.
And I saw him recently quoted in a Washington Post article on PFAS, and I said, well, I'm going to call him up because we haven't talked about this yet on Veterans Radio, although we've talked about a lot of other toxic military base issues. You know, it's one of those things, like many folks here in Southeast Michigan, if things are working out in life, you find yourself a little place up north, maybe on a lake, and a nice northern getaway, and you were able to do that. You have some property up on Van Eden Lake outside Oscoda, Michigan. Life was good, and there were going to be no problems, right? That's why you went up to God's country.
Yeah, and actually the property's been in my our family for a couple generations, and my father-in-law, who was a Marine veteran, served in the Korean War, bought the property originally as a place where the family would all come together, and then it was passed down to us. And so, yeah, exactly. It's a beautiful country up there.
And well, then, the property, your lake property, is, I think, I don't know, northeast, I guess, of Worth Smith Air Force Base, which operated from 1923 to about 1993, so about 70 years, and has been closed for about 26 years. And during that Air Force base was used for all kinds of typical base activity, training. Worth Smith was part of SAC at one point, so a Strategic Air Command that a lot of people would know about. When did, you know, that idyllic up north lifestyle change because of things that were coming off of Worth Smith Air Force Base?
For my family, it was in October of 2016. We received a notice from the state of Michigan indicating that the property is located in what's called the zone of concern for PFAS contamination from the former base. And we were advised at the time that we should not drink the water from our well. And the state of Michigan, the Air Force has not participated in this program at all, but the state of Michigan has provided us with a reverse osmosis filtration system for our kitchen sink. And that's what we have to, any water that we drink has to come from there. So we've been at it, personally for 3 years. In Oscoda, it's actually been, it was actually first discovered by the state back in 2010. And it wasn't until 2016 that the testing began to show that there was a drinking water issue.
Well, let's tell folks, our veteran radio listeners, Tony, what PFAS stands for and the types of materials PFAS is used in.
Yeah, PFAS is is short for per and polyfluoral alkyl substances. It's a chemical class of about 5,000 or so chemicals, most notably in the early phases used in one of them, PFOA, used in Teflon, and PFOS, used in Scotchgard. Those two particular PFAS components are no longer manufactured in the United States. They are, however, manufactured in overseas, so they get back into commerce here, in commerce. But at the military bases, used in the what's called AFFF foam, aqueous film forming foam, developed for the military to effectively put out airplane fires. So at a place like Wurtsmith, they would have been used a lot in training activities over the years. But in addition to the foam, the Teflon, the nonstick products, you find it in things like food packaging, in certain cosmetics, some dental floss, nonstick, your repellent clothing, coats, carpeting, a whole variety of things in commerce. And it's been estimated by the federal government that about 98% of us have PFAS, some levels of some PFAS chemicals in our blood.
And it's PFAS was developed as a solution, a chemical solution to a certain problem, various problems, the slipperiness or stickiness, as we all think about Teflon or Scotchgard. It was really designed to do those things. And because of its man-made nature and its long chemical chain, it's often referred to, isn't it, as the forever chemical.
That's exactly right. It's extremely persistent in the environment and also in our bodies. I read a study that PFOS, which is one of the constituents in AFFF foam, any of it that you ingest today, it will take maybe 5 to 6 decades before it's all completely out of your system. And that's just what you come in contact with on any given day.
Interestingly, because PFAS and this firefighting foam was so preferred by the government and plays such a unique role in aviation fires, electronic fires, fires on ship, it's only been recent that DOD's begun to curtail its use, isn't it?
Very recent, and there's a debate going on in Congress right now as part of the National Defense Authorization Act legislation that's pending in Congress, to actually mandate that the military phase out PFAS firefighting foam within a certain time frame. So it's still in use. I think it's not being used quite so much in training as before, but it's still there.
Yeah, I was surprised to find in the research that DOD says it only stopped land using it for training in 2016, just 3 years ago, and it's my understanding that the Navy is still using it on ships, because it's so viewed as such a good firefighting compound on a confined ship with all of the things that kind of go along with that. So this is a problem that's just beginning to be addressed. And at Wordsmith, as you mentioned, it was first found in 2010. So we're 9 years into this. It's crept off the site, and we're 3 years into it or so that it's impacting private citizens like yourself and your surrounding groundwater and land use. What type of progress has been made in remediating or cleaning up this contamination at this particular former Air Force base?
Unfortunately, very little, Jim. And just to clarify, my family's first encounter with this was in 2016, but it has been dealt with, you know, in a public way and impacting folks from a health regard, at least again, as we've known it since about 2010, 11, 12, there was a do not eat the fish advisory issued for 9 miles of the Osabo River back in 2012. We have some of the most highly contaminated fish in the world there. But unfortunately, it'll be 10 years in March of 2020, and the Air Force still does not have a plan in place to remediate the contamination there. They've done a couple of stopgap measures on the interior of the base, but the groundwater it currently is contaminated over about a 10 square mile area, and no plan in place just yet to take a comprehensive approach to stop it. It's very troubling because it violates Michigan law in seeping into Bennett Lake, which is where my family's home is located, and also the Osabo River, over miles and miles of stretches of surface water. And the Air Force is taking the position that it is subject to sovereign immunity, which, Jim, as you know, is a doctrine in which the government cannot be sued or held legally accountable. So the Air Force is not complying with state law at this point in time, saying that they may get around to incorporating state law provisions in the course of their investigation. But in the meantime, the PFAS constituents continue to seep into our groundwater and surface water throughout Oscoda, and then all of that ends up in Lake Huron, which I can virtually walk to from my home. So Lake Huron is a source of municipal water for, you know, a lot of people in Michigan.
And this isn't just an academic exercise of, oh, we found something that wasn't there before. There are health concerns associated with PFAS contamination and intake through either drinking water or ingestion of fish who've been contaminated. What have you learned about the potential health concerns associated with PFAS over these last few years?
Yeah, well, there was a study conducted in West Virginia. An entire community of Parkersburg was impacted by contamination from a DuPont plant that had a Teflon manufacturing facility there. So they studied, well, I think it may be the largest epidemiological study ever conducted. 70,000 people participated in what was called the C8 science study, and probable links were found for exposure to PFOA to kidney cancer, testicular cancer, thyroid disease, ulcerative colitis, high cholesterol, preeclampsia. Just within the past couple of weeks, the just retired top U.S. toxicologist, Dr. Linda Birnbaum, who is the head of the National Institute of Environmental Health Science, came out and made some pretty strong statements indicating that she finds causal impacts from the entire chemical class of PFAS contaminants for the types of things that I just discussed, and also immunological disorders in children, maybe one of the most troubling aspects of it. And Dr. Birnbaum indicated that as a government employee, she was actually prohibited by the government from saying that there was this causal link. She's now saying that there is, but it's very troubling that the federal government, which through the Department of Defense is one of the largest responsible parties in the country, is kind of operating behind the scenes to clamp down on free speech and good science. And that's really troubling to people like me in Oscoda who deal with this every day of our lives.
And unfortunately for the veteran population that we talk to on Veterans Radio, we've seen this time and time again where the government denies any health impacts, whether it be Agent Orange, the syphilis studies, the radiation exposure studies, burn pit exposure now for those who are, who've been fighting over in Afghanistan for all this time. And now we have to think about, well, how many guys in the Navy, how many guys in the Air Force have been just coated in PFAS as they've done their job or done their training? And we have to wonder what kind of health effects are there, and VA is going to deny them and DOD is going to deny them, and how long will it take before there is a recognition that, yeah, this wasn't good for the veterans' health at all. And that's why I think this issue of talking about PFAS and its potential impact is important to this particular subgroup, Tony, of veterans and their friends.
Absolutely, and I have a number of members of my family who served in the military, and I find it just disgusting that the people who have given their lives for our country are subjected to this kind of treatment. And I know that on the base in Oscoda, there have been some studies that were done after the base closed, and just when they closed the base up, they closed up the fire hydrants. And the state of Michigan went in just a few years ago, knowing that those hydrants hadn't been used since the base was operational, to get a sense of the kind of levels of PFAS that the veterans and their families, because obviously the families lived on the base as well, were exposed to while they were there. And the results in those fire hydrant studies were alarmingly high. And of course, the fishing, which is very nearby, is also a real serious concern. And I've also heard stories about foam parties that they would have, not just, you know, that the foam would pile up and they would actually play in the foam, which, you know, again, is just so, so troubling. And there have been just so few actions taken to try to find out what the levels of exposure were and how our veterans and their family members have been impacted. And my heart goes out to all of them, because as a friend of mine who's a lieutenant colonel, a retired lieutenant colonel in the Air Force, has said, yeah, I signed up for some of this, but I didn't sign up to have my family impacted.
Well, and we've also seen this play out with the groundwater contamination at Camp Lejeune, the Marine base, where it finally took an act of Congress for recognition of the health effects that were being caused by that groundwater contamination. And I wonder whether or not PFAS is going to have to go the same way, that you'll never see VA or DOD recognize, or EPA, the federal U.S. EPA, recognize what needs to be done without a little strong arming from Congress. And you've had the chance to present some of this concern at levels in Washington, D.C. Tell us about that and what reception you received.
Well, it's been interesting, because I've been to Washington now, I think, three times in the last 12, 13 months. And the first time I went was in September of 2018. And at that time, the folks on Capitol Hill were really not that familiar with the PFAS concept. I mean, there are a few key congressional folks who were. Congressman Dan Kildee here from Michigan, who happens to represent Oscoda and Flint as well. But most of the members on the Hill really were just beginning to learn about it in May of this year, and it was totally different. In the various congressional offices that I visited, virtually everyone on both sides of the aisle were asking, what can we do? How can we help? Marked contrast from just a few months earlier. And then I was back again at the end of September. I made a presentation to the National Academy of Sciences. I was the only impacted citizen to speak to this group of scientists, which was really the pressure from Congress is building. Unfortunately, the National Defense Authorization Act is pending right now, and it's tied up because the Department of Defense and the EPA are opposing efforts to on the part of Congress to push the federal government, the EPA, the DOD, to take more proactive measures. And it remains to be seen what's happening.
Well, and I would say to our veteran radio listeners, if you have been at a base and have been around firefighting foam, you've been contaminated. At what level, what cause, we don't know. But for a congressperson to say we don't have any in our state is pretty ignorant and also reflective. If you don't look, you don't know. Isn't that really the way in which DOD is operating?
Yes, very much so.
So you have these bases where every one of these bases has this contamination, but maybe we just don't test for it, we don't look for it, then we don't have to report on it. And I think it takes activists, whether it's community activists like you, Tony Spinola, who's got a new group formed, Water Now, is it?
Need Our Water.
And whether it's community activists or veteran activists on base exposure issues, you've got to push looking at, hey, have we looked? What's the concentration? Are we doing the testing? Find out what's really there. Because otherwise, you tend to just believe what they tell you, oh, we don't have any. Or, and I want to transition over to, apparently the Air Force came into SCOTA and said, oh, yeah, we'll, verbal agreement, we'll do this a little faster. Was there any substance to what they said?
None. No. There was a nice headline that said that they were accelerating the cleanup pace, but those of us who know actually, it's sort of like reading the fine print in the used car ad. When you read, the details of it, it was really just a bunch of smoke and mirrors. And Jim, you're right on the money. It's really, really critical. And I would urge veterans, every veteran listening to me, because it certainly has impacted you and your family in some way, I would guess, to become educated on this and to reach out to your member of Congress and say, hey, we need you to take action. And one of the things that I want to point out is that even in the military is doing some testing, no question, but there's 5,000 PFAS chemicals, not that many in PFAS firefighting foam, but more than two, and some of them are very harmful. We know in SCOTA, just as an example, and I think this is happening in other parts of the country, they're only releasing test results for the two constituents, PFOA and PFOS, and not for any of the other chemicals. It's as if they don't exist, and if you don't ask, you would think there isn't a problem.
So I think one of the messages that you're communicating, Tony, is that get involved in an advocacy group, whether it's a specific base or, in your instance, Need Our Water is probably has a broader concern. But get involved with somebody so that you can get educated and your voice can be heard on this important issue.
Yeah, and if I can, Jim, I'd like to put a shout-out out there to a group called the Veterans and Civilians Clean Water Alliance that was founded by some veterans from Wurtsmith. Who are now located all over the country, and they communicate via Facebook. It's a closed group, but if you're a veteran and you served at Wurtsmith, certainly you should connect with them. But if you served at any of the other bases, you should connect as well, because it's important to begin to share stories and to understand the common issues that people face. So that's one group that I would give a strong shout out to. Well, Need Our Water has a Facebook page, and I would encourage folks to follow that. So, and then there's a group called the National PFAS Contamination Coalition, and I don't believe they have a website, but there are a couple of other organizations that are beginning to put out information. And if you Google PFAS, you're going to find all sorts of hits all over the place. A couple of folks who do some really good reporting here in Michigan, there are two reporters, Garrett Ellison and Paula Gardner from MLive, who do excellent, excellent work on PFAS. And there's a national reporter named Sharon Lerner from The Intercept, who has been following and doing some very in-depth reporting there as well. If you follow their work, you can really stay on top of things.
Well, we appreciate you taking some time this afternoon, Anthony Spinola, an attorney and a founding member of the local advocacy group up at Wurtsmith in SCOTA of Need Our Water. This is a developing area, and so it's a lot of new information for people. It's a lot of concern that maybe we don't have all the data that we need. But I know you're going to stay on top of it, and we'll keep bringing this kind of information to Veteran Radio listeners. So we really appreciate your expertise and your time today.
My pleasure, and thanks for having me, Jim.
So I hope you enjoyed that interview and found it new information and somewhat fascinating, and a call to get out and advocate for those issues that are important to veterans. So that's what we bring you here on Veterans Radio. Check us out always on veteransradio.net. Follow us there or on Facebook. You'll see more timely interviews that we have an opportunity to do and put up. So I think you'll find that fascinating. Stick around after the news. We're going to lighten up the interviews a little bit. We're going to talk to somebody out in California who has a group of gals who go to veteran hospitals to entertain veterans. Some controversy has developed over their activities, which has been going on now for a number of years. They think they're out there boosting morale, and now there's a group saying, no, what you're doing is promoting sexist stereotypes because you're dressing in 1940s USO sort of glamorous style, and you're just promoting a bad image of women. So it's a weird, viewpoint, I guess, in my mind. And I think after you hear from the founder of what they've been doing, the reaction they normally get, you make up your own mind whether it's boosting morale or simply adding to a stereotype. And listen in, you make your own decision.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. Corporal Hiroshi Miyamura engaged Korean attackers in hand-to-hand combat. Details after this. Company H was occupying a defensive position when the enemy fanatically attacked, threatening to overrun the position. Miyamura, a machine gun squad leader, aware of the imminent danger to his men, jumped from his shelter, wielding his bayonet in close hand-to-hand combat, killing 10 of the enemy. Returning to his position, he administered first aid to the wounded and directed their evacuation. As another savage assault hit the line, he manned his machine gun and delivered withering fire until his ammunition was expended. He ordered the squad to withdraw while he stayed behind to render the gun inoperative. He then bayoneted his way through the infiltrated enemy soldiers to a second gun emplacement and assisted in its operation. When the intensity of the attack necessitated the withdrawal of the company, Miyamura ordered his men to fall back while he remained to cover their movement. He killed more than 50 of the enemy before his ammunition was depleted and he was severely wounded. He maintained his stand despite his painful wounds, continuing to repel the attack until his position was overrun. When last seen, he was fighting ferociously against an overwhelming number of enemy soldiers.
The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
Welcome back to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossone, your officer of the deck today. This second interview created a sort of national stir over the pinup girls of California and what they were doing to boost morale among the troops in VA hospitals, kind of building on USO shows. But some people think what they're doing is sexist. You listen to the founder, and you tell us if what Gina and her troops are doing fit the category of morale boosters or sexist. We want to welcome to Veterans Radio Gina Elise. Gina is the founder of a nonprofit called Pinups for Vets. Gina, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, we're glad you called in, and from, I'm sure it's sunny California, although it's cold here in the Midwest. It's always nice in California, I'm told.
Yes, it's beautiful today.
So tell us about the concept of Pinup for Vets.
Sure. So it was basically back in 2006, and there were a lot of stories coming out in the news about our troops coming back from Iraq needing medical care. And I just felt really strongly that I wanted to do something to help out. Sometimes things just really strike a chord with you. And I felt like I wanted to do something to support our troops and veterans. And I've been a fan of pinup art for a long time. They used to paint these beautiful women on the side of aircraft during World War II to boost the morale of the troops, remind them of what they were fighting for. I just feel it's such a beautiful celebration of a woman. And I thought I would take that concept and bring it into today to create a fundraiser pinup calendar that we could use to support our veterans and troops today. And fast forward 14 years, here we are. We have a number of different initiatives that support the veteran community, everything from donating state-of-the-art rehab equipment to veterans hospitals nationwide, to a 50-state hospital tour where we dress up as 1940s pinups and we hand deliver our calendars as gifts of appreciation to the hospitalized veterans. The unique thing now about our calendars is that they actually feature female veterans as the models. And it's always very special because a lot of these ladies come into the hospitals with me. You know, we call them Pinups for Vets ambassadors. They're our volunteers. And when we're standing with the patients are always very surprised to find out that the ladies in front of them wearing the 1940s attire are also veterans. And so there's that really special veteran to veteran bond. You know, where did you serve? Where did you serve? And it's just, to me, I think it's really important for healing, that special connection.
Well, it also gives the ladies who volunteer here Pinup for Vets ambassadors a new opportunity or a new way for them to serve their fellow vets by helping in that healing process, doesn't it?
It really does. A lot of them have told me that they've found a renewed sense of purpose after getting out, you know, volunteering with us. And you know, one of our ambassadors, she said about volunteering with our organization, I came for the service, but I stayed for the sisterhood. So these ladies have become such a strong support network for each other. And so not only is it, you know, special for the patients that we're visiting, but it's also helped our own ambassadors, our own female veterans, you know, really to find a renewed sense of purpose and also to reclaim their femininity after getting out of the military.
Well, I think that's certainly one of the things that I've seen online, some of the statements by some of your female ambassadors who may have been a truck driver or may have been a doctor or a nurse, a pilot. And one of them said, I haven't had makeup on like this maybe in my entire life. I've never felt like this. So it is an interesting transition from being in Afghanistan to really being an amateur model in this, you know, retro 1940s look.
And I feel like these ladies are so multifaceted, and to be able to show that they can do both, you know, they can do everything. They can, you know, go on deployments. They can come back and be, you know, a model in a pinup calendar. They're so dynamic. And I think, you know, it's really been inspirational to a lot of other women. I actually have mothers emailing me to tell me, hey, you know, Gina, I'm showing my daughter, you know, your calendar. And I'm explaining about these beautiful women. You know, not only are they beautiful on the outside, they're beautiful on the inside because of what they do, you know, after the service, they're giving back. And so I just think it's such a celebration of these incredible, resilient women.
Well, for those who may not understand what 1940s look is or what the retro look is, talk about the fashion a little bit.
Yeah, so we really try to remain true to the aesthetic of the 1940s. Red lips, the cat eye liner on the eyes, the flower in the hair. We wear dresses when we go into the hospitals that are, you know, usually down to the knee. Very almost conservative dresses. Just sort of like that 1940s style. A lot of them are kind of flare out at the waist with really pretty, you know, bright, colorful patterns. I like it when we're wearing really bright and colorful things, especially in the hospitals, because, you know, as you know, hospitals can be very stark and sterile. And so it's kind of nice to see that pop of color.
this look doesn't get pulled off by going to the local department store and pulling it off the rack. And the hair and makeup isn't what you're normally going to find. So
right.
tell us a little bit about the whole support network to pull this off.
Yeah, well, producing the calendar is a huge project. I mean, it takes about 6 months from start to finish. And, of course, we're doing multiple other things at the same time. But you know, it's everything from location scouting, casting, actually doing the photography, to the post-production, editing, graphic design, and printing. So that whole calendar, it's a huge process. And, you know, we have a team to help us, the photographer, hair and makeup artist. We work with an amazing clothing brand called Voodoo Vixen that's providing the outfits. As far as, you know, when we do our hospital visits, the girls have really just taken this look. You know, they've committed so much to it. They watch tutorials on YouTube about how to get that 1940s hair just right. I mean, they have a whole wardrobe now with pinup outfits. They love it. They always ask me, when's our next hospital visit? When's our next event? It just brings them so much joy to be able to do this. And that makes me so happy.
Well, I'm going to come back to the hospital visits in a minute here, but let me stick with the calendar for a moment because you mentioned it, and I had made my own notes earlier in getting ready, and the composition of the photographs for each month are really well done. The background info, you know, where the things are set up. This is a very, very professionally composed set of pictures for this calendar. Tell us a little bit about that inspiration.
So I'm a perfectionist, and I want to make sure to put out an amazing quality product every year. You know, the calendar is helping us to fundraise to support all of these different initiatives that we have. And, you know, it's a matter of just locking down really visually interesting locations. We like to shoot with the classic cars, with the vintage aircraft, you know, old school diners, just some things that, you know, you would look at and give you a sense of nostalgia. And so it's a huge process, but I'm pretty selective about how the calendar looks. Like I said, I'm a perfectionist and I want to put out a really, really nice product each year. You know, so our supporters want to come back and support, you know, year after year.
Well, you can tell you're a perfectionist in these photographs and the way the calendar is put together. And if people go to pinupsforvets.com, they'll see the photos I'm talking about. But how do you keep replicating this for 14 years? That's not easy to do.
No, I mean, I look at pinup books all the time. I'm a huge fan of, you know, multiple pinup artists, and so I get inspiration for that. So, yeah, sometimes it's challenging to find things that look a little bit different, but, you know, we have different models every year. It's different clothing. And so, yeah, we just try to really mix it up each year to keep it fresh.
Well, I think you've done a wonderful job. And I was going to ask you where the veteran models, I'm going to use that term even though they're amateur models, but where those ladies come from? How do they find you?
All over. So we usually put a casting notice out on our social media in the spring, and we got so many submissions this year. I think we had over 200 submissions from female veterans across the country. We asked them to submit some pictures, tell us about their a little bit about themselves, talk to us about what they did in the military. So we want to find ladies with really good stories to share. And so it's quite a process to go through and select the ladies. And, you know, that calendar is only 12 months, so we only have a certain amount of spots. But, it's actually such an honor that so many lady veterans want to be in the calendar every year.
Well, let's turn to the hospital visits, because I think that's an interesting aspect of the work that your nonprofit organization is doing and has been doing all over the country and actually internationally. So talk to us about how hospital visits started and where it's grown to.
Yeah. So, you know, I never really intended for this to become my life. When I started, you know, it was sort of like a project on the side as a way for me to give back. And I just, you know, I thought that it might be nice to actually take the calendars into hospitals and deliver them as gifts, you know, as we were starting off fundraising so we could buy rehab equipment for hospitals. So I thought it would be nice to actually, you know, deliver these as gifts at the patient's bedside. And, you know, when I started doing that, I saw the impact that those visits made. You know, I would get dressed up 1940s style, and it's always such a surprise. A lot of times our veterans are laying in bed for months, you know, weeks, maybe months on end with no visitors. Some of them don't have friends and family close by. And so, you know, a visit is just a way to brighten their day, to show that someone out there is remembering them, that they're appreciated, that we're not forgetting about their service and their sacrifice. And it's quite a blast from the past, you know, walking in and something they don't really expect. And I've had really amazing things happen on my hospital visits. And in fact, recently, one of my ambassadors told me that she sent this to me in a quote, so I wanted to get this. She said that she was passing a veteran in the hospital, and he said, "Thank you so much for bringing light to me on a hard day. I feel so much better going into surgery now." So I think sometimes it's really the small things that can make the biggest impact. You know, a little distraction can go a long way. A lot of times when we're finishing up on a hospital ward and we're walking back to the elevator to go to the next floor, you can look in the rooms and see the veterans flipping through their calendar. And, you know, when you're going through challenges in life, you know, for all of us, it's nice to just have a little break just from reality for a little while. I think that's so important for healing. And as the years went on, I started getting contacted by female veterans asking me, "Hey, you know, I'd like to be involved. Can I go on a hospital visit with you?" They feel so strongly about giving back to, you know, their brothers and sisters in arms. And that was quite a transition when we started having female veterans come on our hospital visits with us, because, you know, it's like I was saying, it's a win-win, because not only is it helpful to these ladies, you know, it's just, like I said, it's given them a new purpose again, you know, after getting out of the military, and to be able to, they call it service after service. That's what they tell me. To be able to continue to give back, to connect with their fellow brothers and sisters in arms, that veteran brotherhood, sisterhood is so strong. I can see it immediately, you know, when we're in the hospitals. And it's such a magic moment. I wish I could just, you know, share this with everybody so they could see what it's really like. But, you know, when we go in and I introduce them, "Oh, this is, you know, she's a Marine veteran, she's an Army veteran," and then the veteran in the bed will say, "Wait, she's a veteran?"
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. You know, she's a veteran. And then they talk about, "Oh, well, where did you serve?" And it's sometimes they end up, you know, they've served in the same place or on the same ship. And it's just such a magic connection. And the ladies especially love getting to meet with their fellow female veterans, you know, in the hospitals as well. And it's,
well, you've
just
done,
really
you've done
magic.
Yeah, you've done this dozens and dozens and dozens of time.
We visited with over 13,000 veterans across the country and over 31 states.
Which really shows that it is something that is universal. It's not a California thing. It's not a Florida thing. It's really universal, isn't it?
It really is. And it's just, it's really about just bringing happiness and showing appreciation. That's what it's about.
Well, unfortunately, there's always haters in the world, or the old saying goes, you know, no good deed goes unpunished. Somewhere along the line, people decided that this wasn't an appropriate activity, and where it first came to light to me was an article that I think it was the San Diego VA first invited you to come, and then said, "Oh, don't come this time. You know, we're revoking the authorization to visit the veterans." Tell us a little bit about that problem how surprising it might have been.
Yeah, so we had two female Marines go in and talk to volunteer services about making a visit. They locked the visit down, and then one of them got a call saying that, you know, we're not able to come because they felt that the visit would essentially incite catcalling from the veterans at the hospital. And To be honest, I've been doing this for 14 years and have visited with thousands and thousands and thousands of veterans. And we get the utmost respect from both male and female veterans when we're visiting, you know, and so I just didn't really understand that. And then, you know, our supporters got pretty upset about it and called and emailed, and then they reversed saying that we could come visit, but that the last that I understand is that we can't hand out the calendars. So I mean, I'm not really sure. It's, to me, it's just baffling because we're trying to do something good and I just don't understand the pushback from it. I mean, we've had such incredible letters from other hospitals around the country. And so to me, it's confusing why, when you're trying to do something positive for the veteran community, you know, why are we having this pushback from the staff there?
And we're talking to Gina Elise, who's the founder of Pinups for Vets, a nonprofit, a 501c3. And you've been doing this, as you say, for 14 years. Is here in 2019 the first time that you're getting this kind of negative reaction?
We had an issue a couple years back at the Sioux Falls VA where something similar happened. But then again, they, you know, got bombarded by our supporters with emails and calls, and then they reversed that decision too.
Well, and you post on your website, which is pinupsforvets.com, you have a lot of the VA hospital letters of appreciation.
We have so many letters. In fact, I mean, I just pulled one up. So the chief of volunteer services from the Oklahoma VA wrote to us, "The impact of the time you took providing a smile, the impact of the time you took to providing a smile, good conversation, and most importantly, the recognition to our valuable veterans is not expressible by mere words. Your visit was simply the best visit I have been a part of since my beginning as a volunteer services chief." And then I have another email, another message, a recreation therapist at the LA VA wrote, "Overall, the veterans' quality of life increases and their spirits are so uplifted. I can personally see an improvement in their cognitive, physical, and social functioning." So we've had letter after letter after letter from staff at hospitals around the country about, you know, the impact that these visits make.
And so you can kind of write this off as to, well, it's just one person at the San Diego VA. Mm-hmm. But Gina, you and I spoke before we started recording that unfortunately, there are more critics, one fairly high profile that recently wrote a piece for The Hill, Kayla Williams, who was the director of the Center for Women Veterans at the Department of Veterans Affairs. She served in that role. She's now a senior fellow at an organization, and she's a former veteran herself, Army veteran, and we've spoken to her here on Veterans Radio, but I was very surprised to see her take up the argument that this is inappropriate activity in a VA hospital, that it objectifies women. Give me your thoughts about her position and what this continued criticism does to the organization.
I mean, we're just going to keep doing what we do because we know the impact that it makes. I guess I just don't understand. If as a woman, you can't wear a hair flower and a dress down to your knees, what are you supposed to wear? I mean, I guess I just, it's so confusing for me because we dressed, to be honest, a lot more conservative than people dress today. You know, we are wearing these gorgeous outfits, you know, inspired by the 1940s. A comment that I always get from people is, "Gina, thank you so much for keeping it so classy. Thank you for keeping history alive." And so to me, people that comment that have never been on the hospital visits with us, they don't know what it's like. You know, they haven't been on a visit with us. So, they can't really say what it's like.
The statement that Kayla Williams, formerly director of Center for Women Veterans at the VA, wrote, she said, "Organizations that objectify women and reinforce sexist stereotypes with their attire or merchandise are not welcome." And I, you know, as a general statement, who's going to object to that kind of statement? But I didn't understand its application to what you're doing. And
yeah,
I guess I like your reaction to, based on the reactions of the veterans, do you feel that you're objectifying women or reinforcing sexist stereotypes?
To be honest, the ladies love doing this. They feel that, you know, they don't want to be judged for what they're doing. The female veterans love doing this. In fact, let me read you a statement from one of our ambassadors. She said, being a volunteer with Pinup Servettes and a veteran myself, I know how much this organization changes lives. In no way have I ever felt demeaned or have ever been catcalled while on hospital visits. This organization not only brings light into the lives of hospitalized veterans, but has personally provided me a way to take back my femininity on my own terms. As a woman veteran with PTSD, it's hard to reconnect after military life. Pinup Servettes has truly saved my life and created a tight-knit group of other women veterans that I can reach out to and connect with when times are tough. There's nothing about this organization that promotes negativity or objectification of women. So she's saying that it saved her life being involved with us. And so I've only seen positive things come out of what we do. The ladies actually find it, you know, pretty disrespectful when people say that this, that, you know, it's exploiting women or it's objectifying because they're so classy. So I don't know. It's really sad that someone, you know, would say something like that, that has not been on a hospital visit with us and doesn't know what it's like.
I also think there's that particular Hill article had a number of people jump in and, you know, submit their own individual thing that was negative, but it sort of felt like, well, we're really not talking about Pinup for Vets, but we're going to beat that drum because that's the one in front of us. We're really talking about something else, and that's got to be a bit demoralizing for your ambassadors.
Yeah, I mean, they just don't understand what the big deal is. You know, we're trying to do something positive and do it in a very classy way. And I mean, like I said, I've never experienced that when we've been in hostels. We've been doing this for 14 years and have visited with over 13,000 veterans. You know, we get the utmost respect from both male and female veterans. And someone that has not been on a hospital visit and is commenting on what it's like, you know, my ambassadors just, they love doing it. It's been a positive force in their life, you know, to be able to give back to their fellow brothers and sisters, to be able to do it in a creative way while embracing their femininity. And I only see positive things come out of it.
Well, I think you're, work has probably touched a lot of people the right way, and I'm sort of surprised if this gets any continuing momentum, and that's why I was surprised by the article. Will this change anything that you're doing? Do you see either VA hospitals backing away at the moment, or changes in your approach on how you might continue with the organization?
No, to me, it's just important to demonstrate what we do, and I want to keep doing what we've been doing. And, you know, I'm a perfectionist, you know, when it comes to how, you know, the organization is. And I feel so proud of what we've been able to accomplish. You know, there's veterans across the country that are using rehab equipment that we've donated to those hospitals. So it's helping veterans to get better, you know, boosting morale. We've done morale boosting makeovers for military wives and female veterans. I have units deployed asking, Gina, can you please send us some calendars? So we're trying to make an impact in the military and veteran community in multiple ways. And we like to do it in a creative way. So, to me, I just want to keep forging ahead and to keep giving back to America's heroes. I mean, I have been so lucky to work with the veteran community for 14 years. The people I meet inspire me daily. Just their resilience, their work ethic, their discipline. This is why I'm so compelled to continue giving back and serving. And if you just look at the reaction from our own supporters about what happened, you'll be able to understand that they are 100% behind what we do and want us to keep going. I got so many messages. Gina, do not let this deter you. Please keep doing what you're doing.
Perfect. I was hoping you'd reveal what you're feeling and what people are telling you. And if our listeners on Veterans Radio want to keep following Gina, Elise, and Pinups for Vets, where should they connect with you?
Sure. They can check us out at pinupsforvets.com. Or we are on social media on Facebook, Pinups for Vets, also on Instagram and Twitter at Pinups for Vets.
Well, we really appreciate you taking some time today to talk to Veterans Radio about the work that's been done for 14 years and to address the controversy that's sort of developed a little bit here in 2019. But the words that I heard you use, like classy and professional and perfectionist, all apply to what I've seen, and I think I hope all the ladies keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Well, I guess my view on this is pretty obvious. I think the controversy is just something that happens in California and maybe some other pockets of the country, but overall I think the women have their hearts in the right spot and they're trying to do a good cause by getting into some VA hospitals and boosting morale. So, but you go look at the calendars, go look at the photographs, go look at the website and make up your own mind. And if you disagree with me, send me a note at jim@veteransradio.net. And if you like what you heard, go ahead and send me something as well. Sometimes all we get is criticism, but it's always nice to have a compliment along the way as well. Dale and I at Veterans Radio are always trying to bring you interesting, different stories. So if you have any, pass them along to us at dale@veteransradio.net or jim@veteransradio.net. Certainly go to our swag store at our website and buy some of the goodies or send us some buddy money to keep the program on the air. It does cost a little bit to do this and be able to promote it properly. And until next time, here on Veterans Radio, you are dismissed.